coast to coast on the World Wide Web. This is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca. Greetings, fellow jugheads. I'm Norm Borg. You know, you go to any racing website or chat room, and the one thing you will hear is the call for tracks to lower takeouts. Well, Plain Ridge Racecourse is the latest to heed the call. It's dropping its takeout to 15% on win, place, show, and exotic wagering, making it the lowest per capita in all of racing. We'll talk to the president of Plain Ridge about that and about a situation developing in Florida involving dog tracks and slots and how that might impact harness racing overall. That's all straight ahead on Trot Radio. Gary Piantowski is president of Plain Ridge Racecourse in Plainville, Massachusetts. That track has taken the bold step of not only lowering their takeout, but lowering them down to 15%, making it the lowest per capita takeout in all of racing. Gary, welcome to Trot Radio.
Thank you.
Okay, so you're down to 15% in your takeouts, lowest in the industry. Is that a loss leader or a potential profit maker?
I can't tell you 100% yet, but I don't think it's going to be a loss leader. Live racing around the country and Canada, as you know, the numbers are so far down that I'm not quite sure what the effect's going to be. I'm pretty sure it's going to drive up some live handle, whether it equates out and balances off the reduction, which on our win, place, and show is 4%, and on our exotic wagers is 11%.
Okay.
I'm not sure where it's going to fall, but I do know that, you know, after being in this business since 1972, that everything that everybody's tried hasn't worked, and when something's broken, you try to fix it, so we give it a shot.
Yeah, and there's no reason why it can't be part of a multi-pronged strategy, I would think, of A, you know, something like this, getting back some of the old players who just want to know that they have a bit more of an edge over the house, as it were, and then other, you know, other promotions, other marketing ideas that might bring new blood here. Part of your strategy is something that I found very appealing, and it's the arrangement that Plain Ridge now has with the sale of its live product to simulcast outlets that provide live racing. They get it for really cheap. Those that don't, pay more. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, going back to the introduction of simulcasting in Massachusetts, back when I was chairman of the Massachusetts Racing Commission in the early 90s, we actually put the bill through. And at that time, everybody wanted to raise the takeout so they could get more money from it. And, you know, I was an opponent of that for the last 25 years, and finally we're going to institute it. And one of the things that's always been a bug on me is the fact that you get a 8x10 room with a guy with a computer, and he sets up an offshore account, or now even in the United States, and says, sell me your signal for 3%, just like you're selling it to any live racetrack.
Mm.
And people joined right in and said, oh, great, it's another outlet, let's send it to them. Well, these things have sprung up everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and we really look at the calculation. If you sell your signal for 3%, which is the standard going rate for everybody, and if your blended rate between your win, place, and show and your exotic is 22, he's keeping 19.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a racetrack, you've got to give it to your horseman. You've got to give a percentage to your horseman, of course, which is the right thing to do. You've got to pay overhead. You've got to pay state taxes. You've got to pay for a barn. You've got to pay to maintain a racetrack, maintain a paddock. And in the end, these are the people that are making all the money. You got one or two employees in a room with a computer system. And since the introduction of simulcasting and merged pools, this is what's happened in our business. And I think it's ridiculous, and I refuse to send it the last couple of years.
Mm.
It is an area that provides a service for people who can't get to the track, and that's fine. I'll gladly do business with them. Just pay the fee.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Do they have to go to a site like that? There's plenty of other sites that help support racing, is there not?
Yes, there is, and that's what I'm trying to encourage. I'm trying to say, you know, here, if it's 1%, for instance, Freehold Raceway is struggling right now down in New Jersey. You know, it's an old-time afternoon racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
They own a couple of OTBs. I'd gladly sell Freehold and its OTBs at 1%, but if those OTBs aren't affiliated with the racetrack and aren't paying purses and aren't paying a fee to the racetrack, then let them pay a higher fee.
Yeah.
So that I can take the money from them and distribute it to my horsemen and to our shareholders, including myself here at the racetrack.
I think that's a very forward-thinking position to take because, you know, as you said, when simulcast first came out and everybody was crazy to sell the signal, it soon became a matter of, what's the old saying, penny wise, pound foolish?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, at that time it was exciting, you know. Oh, God, we've got another outlet. You know, we're up to 200 outlets. We're up to 400 outlets. And all these outlets kept springing up. And it didn't, when you really look at it, it doesn't make sense. You've given away your product, and the people who are facilitating it and stealing your bettors are the ones making all the money. It doesn't make any sense, and I'm just, you know, we don't participate in it, and we made it public. Now, I haven't been sending my signal to those types of places for the last couple of years.
Well, you know, there's a heck of a lot of money that does go offshore in terms of money wagered on horse racing of both breeds, and it's money that could be used for the betterment of the sport, and goodness knows we need it. Now, in addition to your role as president of Plain Ridge, you're also on the board of the Florida Standardbred Breeders and Owners Association, and I found this rather interesting. As you're probably aware, there's a proposed bill in the state legislature in Florida regarding dog tracks and the slots and poker rooms they provide. It's a bit scary if you look at it in the big picture for horse racing if it results in a trend. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a little bit frightening, and as we've seen, you know, I sat in up here in Massachusetts, sat in on where it really first started when they dropped greyhound racing at Lincoln and turned it into just a racino with no live racing. It was dog racing, and they just abandoned it. And then, of course, in Massachusetts, the voters voted it out, and this is going to start happening, I'm afraid, across the country. You look at people who have invested into a property to become a gaming operation, most of the times on the backs and on the heels of horsemen and farms, etc. And now what the states are doing, they're looking for money, they're going to draw it back. And at some point, you know, there's going to be bills filed like they were in Florida. I think it's very scary, and I think it's a warning.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the warning for many years. Nobody's paying attention to it.
Well, the state representative commented on how greyhound racing is in a state of decline. Help me out here. I don't understand how getting rid of or giving tracks the opportunity to get rid of greyhound racing is going to help the state in terms of the tax revenue they create. I mean, what's the end game? What's the positive here?
Well, if you look at the end game, let's say, you know, and you're looking at Pompano, for instance, if it bled out into thoroughbred racing and harness racing, if they're paying purses of, let's say, $10 million, and the state looks at it and says, okay, well, you're not making any money on that segment of your business, correct? And you say, yes, we're not making any money. As a matter of fact, it's costing us money. So, you know, the owners of a racetrack and the state sit down and they say, we've got $10 million here. You keep five and we'll keep five. We don't need live racing. That's a tough thing to turn down when in this budgetary climate for all the states, and I'm sure in Canada too, the economy is depressed, and they're looking for sources of revenue. So they're very myopic view because they don't realize what the impact is across the states and across Canada's breeding programs.
Well, you know, the one thing we as an industry have in our favor is that we represent such an important component to the economy in a state or a province that doing that is going to throw a lot of people out of work. I mean, and all the other incendiary businesses. Apparently, 4,000 people will be out of a job if greyhound racing folds in Florida.
Yeah, I would imagine the direct employment and the indirect employment is probably threefold of that when you consider, you know, just the guy that drives the truck to bring the feed or whatever. I mean, you know, you can go through the ancillary effect all the way down the road and you'll understand. But, you know, people are short-sighted. They look at it and it's a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, it's particularly greyhound racing, it's hard to argue that that's a great sport. You know, it just there's no support for it.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those games where, you know, it attracts the tourists because it's something new. They don't have it in all the states. It doesn't exist on a paramutual level here in Canada, so people will go. But you're right. I hear what you're saying. You see what the potential impact could be for horse racing. Is your organization in Florida doing anything to lobby against it at this point?
Well, you know, I'm on the board of directors in Florida, and we just signed a contract with Isle of Capri, a contract which I abstained from. It was a 10-4 vote, and just my position was not relative to the contract itself per se, but just the split where I thought a higher percentage was going to the breeders. That was, you know, four times higher than any takeout for live racing or the card room, and that was the reason for my abstention. I don't see but this legislation being amended to carry greyhound racing. There's opinions on our board and down in Florida that if this thing's not going to see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. I think it is going to see the light of day. I think it's going to sail through the legislature, and I think it's going to pass.
Hmm.
And it's going to be up to the individual operators whether they want to continue on with live racing, if they find it profitable or not. And that sets a horrible precedent, as it did in Rhode Island, as you're seeing, you know, that some of the co-op acts that they want in Pennsylvania and New York. It's a little frightening out there, and people better pay attention to it.
Pay attention
to our business and try to do something different.
The scary thing is, once the tracks, you know, the harness and horse racing tracks start, thoroughbred tracks start paying attention, it might be too late. The ball's rolling. Genie's out of the bottle.
Yes, it is, and that's very unfortunate. And we need to get our statement out there, and like you said, what the impact is on farms and open spaces, et cetera, and the ancillary incomes and the people that rely on racing. It's not just the people who punch tickets or the horsemen who clean stalls. There's a lot of other people involved. And you need to get that out there and make sure people know about it. So when these guys do go to vote, they know what the impact is.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you something in closing, just to reinforce what we're talking about. I'm the track announcer at a track here in Canada. And, of course, we have live racing. But I guarantee you, the dining room crowds, if there was no live racing, you would see a big drop-off in the dining room crowds.
Yeah, I think that segment, particularly in Canada, God bless Canada, because you know, there is a huge interest in harness racing. There always has been. But I think, you know, in the United States, if you go to those dining rooms, you're going to see that they're dwindling also. Because, for one thing, you know, our industry, unfortunately, a half hour, 35 minutes between races is just ridiculous. I try to run mine off every 11 minutes and keep the action, you know, keep people looking at what they're doing. And that's part of why we lowered the takeout. Hey, come on down, try it. It's not much more than the takeout, the slot machine. And you might have some more fun than sitting here pressing a button.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Gary, keep up the good work.
Yes, thank you very much, and I appreciate it.
Don't let them beat you down, my friend. Keep at it. Thanks for being on Trot Radio.
All right, anytime. Take care.
Bye-bye now. Now, that is a forward-thinking guy, and he, like the rest of us, have just got to steel ourselves with Churchillian iron will and continue to fight for our game. That's it for this edition of Trot Radio, a presentation of Standardbred Canada in cooperation with Boar Communications.